This is Primal Potential, and I am your host, Elizabeth Benton. Through education, motivation, and implementation, we will bridge the gap between knowing and doing so we can master fat loss naturally and help you reach your highest potential. Let's get started. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Primal Potential podcast. We are continuing this anniversary week. Tuesday was officially the 2-year anniversary of Primal Potential, and I wanted to do some special things this week, some things that really I've thought about doing for a long time related to the underlying issues that either lead to weight struggles or just a messed up relationship with food or with body image. And today's episode in particular is one that I have been thinking about for a long time. It's one that I've talked about doing a number of times, and to be quite honest, the reason I haven't done it is because it makes me a little nervous. That's just the reality, but we are doing it today. That laughter you hear is because today I have my mom on the show today, and the reason that she is on is because she's to blame for all my issues. No, I'm kidding. I'm only kind of kidding. No. Kind of. But the reality is that our food issues begin somewhere. And for me, my issues with food, my issues with body image started when I was a kid. And so obviously, both indirectly and very directly, my mom was a part of that. And so there's two primary objectives for this show. Number one is to help you begin to think about the issues that are beneath your struggle with your weight, that are beneath your unhealthy relationship with food or your body image. And then the other thing is to have an honest conversation about raising overweight children, right? Because that is a very real struggle, whether your child has weight issues or negative self-image or preoccupation with weight or with food. And even for those of you that might someday have kids, I think these are really important conversations to have. And I'm not here to suggest that I have all the answers or that my mom has all the answers. In fact, I will adamantly say my mom does not have all the answers for sure, for sure. But I do think it's an important conversation to have. And one of the most important things that I did to break out of the unproductive cycle of years and years and years of yo-yo dieting and on again, off again, all or nothing thinking was to say, wait one second, what are my issues beyond food? Where did they come from and how do I address them? Because yeah, I ate too much. Yes, I binged too often. I bounced back and forth between total deprivation and miserable restriction and avoidance and overindulgence. But the hey, fatso, get it in gear trick wasn't working for me. The you're so disgusting, you need to make a change and do the work. It didn't work. So if I hated my body so much and I was so unhappy and I wanted more for my life, but I wasn't doing the work, there's obviously something more there. What was behind my overeating? What was driving that? And that's such a hard thing. But honestly, that was the primary difference between nearly 30 years of struggling with a dieting mindset of, you know, what's the best food strategy? What's the best exercise strategy? How hyper-disciplined can I be? The biggest difference between that approach and the strategy of how do I just become a normal, healthy person with food? How do I just learn to take care of myself? It's kind of like the difference between, you know, if you have serious problems in a romantic relationship and you just say, well, we just need more date nights. We need to spend more time together. Well, yeah, you can do that and you'll feel busy and you'll feel like you're doing something, but you very likely are not working on the right thing. You're not addressing what are the issues, what's going on. The reality, guys, is that we are not born turning to food for comfort. That is a learned behavior. We are not born feeling ashamed of our bodies. We are not born feeling like our self-worth is associated with our size. Those are learned behaviors. We're not born sneaking and hiding food. That is a learned behavior. One of the reasons that I so strongly advocate tracking, writing down what you eat and how it makes you feel, is that I had to monitor my own behavior. Right? And I'm not saying we all have these deep past wounds and we need to spend time sitting with our moms having these difficult conversations. I'm way too practical for that, even as I sit here having a conversation with my mom. What I'm saying is you have to know what the issue is. And too many people are trying to fix the issue that isn't. They think they can just muscle their way or hate themselves to a lean body. And I think your past would tell you that is unlikely. We have to pay attention to why we're doing what we're doing. What beliefs are holding us back? I realized that when I overate, it was almost always when I was alone. Or if I wasn't alone, it was associated with tons of shame and insecurity and obsessing over what people might be thinking about me. And I had to say to myself, can I ever get healthy for real and stay that way if I continue to act this way, if I continue to think this way? No. If I turn to food when I'm sad or lonely or angry or ashamed, can I achieve my goals if that continues to be my standard operating procedure? No. And the diets don't address those issues, right? They work until things get dicey, until things get rough. And that's where we need to focus on making the changes. And another important point that I just want to make off the bat is that just because you have a learned behavior that has always been that way, related to food or related to body image, doesn't make it true, okay? Just because it's been your experience doesn't make it true. Just because it's the behavior or the thought process that you're most comfortable with doesn't make it a behavior that you need to or should continue. I want this episode to trigger some questions for you, and I want you to really take the time to answer the questions like, what unhealthy food patterns do I have? What unproductive self-image issues do I have? Where did that come from? What was perpetuating that? And how can I begin to change it? So with that said, I want to talk about some of the issues that started really early with me. And I hope that if nothing else, it just gets you thinking about where some of your unhealthy associations came from. And these are realities whether you struggle with your weight or you don't. Whether you have weight to lose or you don't. And I hope this will get you thinking about helpful ways and unhelpful ways to not only deal with yourself, but also to deal with children. We're talking about other adults in our lives that have to lose weight. My advice is stay in your own lane. It's none of your business. Focus on your own work and stay out of theirs. But with kids, it's a little bit more challenging because we're feeding them and we are teaching them. But there are some really destructive things that can happen with the best of intentions. And I think that that was a real part of my reality. So that is really what we want to talk about. And again, I don't have all the answers. My mom definitely doesn't have all the answers. We know that there are a lot of landmines out there and we jumped all over them for like my whole life. I mean, we just played in the landmines. We really did. But I want to have some tough conversations, and I got to give my mom serious, serious kudos for being willing to do this, because while it's definitely not fun for me to think about this stuff, I know that it's not fun at all for her to think about this, because I know that her biggest objective always and continues to be making sure that her kids are okay. And to look at how your relationship was with your child and be able to say, I really messed up in a lot of ways, I know that takes a lot of courage. So seriously, Mom, thank you for being here, because it means a lot to me and to everybody that's listening. I hope that you will understand the fact that this is absolutely a sensitive conversation, even though we can joke about it and laugh about it. On a number of occasions, we've said that one day I'd end up on Oprah's couch talking about you, and my mom has said, like, you got to be careful what you do with your kids, because you never know what platform they're going to have to tell the whole world about it. So my mom's name is Cindy. She's sitting here next to me. I recently moved back to New Hampshire, so I have the pleasure of being able to do this with her in person on my birthday of all days and Primal's anniversary. So, Mom, thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate it.
I'm glad to be here, and I just want to be helpful. That's all.
And I really think that the conversation in and of itself is tremendously helpful. So, sort of the backstory, guys, is my mom is tall and thin. And I am not tall, and I was never thin. Even now, I have a thick build that is very unlike my mom, who is just much naturally leaner than I am, hasn't really had the weight struggles that I had. Without boring you with the history, she had some health challenges during her pregnancy, and I was a chunky, chunky baby. I have an older sister who is built very much like my mom. She's even taller. She's almost 6 feet tall, and she is like ballerina build. When she and I stand side to side, her hip bone is like at my breast. So she's all legs, super lean. My mom's, you know, 5'8", getting shorter, but we don't have to talk about that, but and very lean. So I'm not built like my family. And I think that was kind of a tough adjustment because growing up, my sister Debbie and I, we ate the same way and we looked very different. Mm-hmm. And I think that was probably kind of tough for you as a mom to be like, how do I have these two kids that look so different? And if we didn't know any better, yeah, I totally could have been adopted.
Yes, it's true.
So I would love to know, you know, obviously we have different recollections and some things that were really significant to me, you're like, huh, I don't remember that. But looking back on my weight struggles as a kid and looking back on your approach, what do you remember about your approach with me specifically, not with the family, because obviously it was a very different approach with Debbie than it was with me. Mm-hmm. What is your recollection of your approach related to my weight?
My recollection is that I was concerned from the day that you were born that you were, you know, over the charts for weight.
And I'm an overachiever, guys.
No. And so my concern right from the get-go was being able to somehow or other get you to be thin.
Yeah.
That was what I wanted to do. I wanted to help you to get thin. And to me, I guess I just thought whatever it's going to take, I'm going to get her across that finish line of being thin and being like the rest of us.
Mm. Did it work?
No. It did not.
And you know,
that's why we're here today.
That's right. That is really, truly why we are here today. It began at day one. But it's really interesting because, you know, from your perspective, you're very clear, like your objective was to make me thin.
Yes.
Come hell or high water, that was your objective.
Yes.
To me, and you know this because I have letters that you wrote to me specifically when I graduated from the eighth grade, to me, the approach meant I wasn't okay the way I was.
And you weren't okay the way you were,
right?
To me, I mean,
right.
I this sounds. I mean, and trust me, I love my daughter. My daughter loves me.
Ooh, that's deep.
But yeah, but you weren't okay.
I know.
You know, to me, your appearance wasn't okay, and it wasn't okay for me. I felt like it wasn't okay for the world out there, and I know, still to this day, how hard it is.
Right.
For people to be overweight, and my goal was to protect you from that pain.
That's
what I wanted to do.
Even though, then not only did I have the pain of being overweight, I had the pain of not being accepted in my own home.
Yes.
That was hard.
And see, I didn't think of it like that.
Right.
It never struck me that you were feeling that in any way.
And I couldn't, as a kid, communicate that to you.
Exactly.
And whenever we would have conversations about my weight, It was a rah-rah, lose the weight. And and I remember very clearly it was, my family calls me Betsy, just so you guys know. And you cannot call me Betsy unless you're related by blood. Don't try. We won't be friends anymore. That's the rule. But growing up, it would be, Betsy, you're so smart. Betsy, you're so talented. If only you could lose this weight, imagine how special you could be. Imagine how wonderful you would be. And do you remember sending that message, like, directly?
I don't remember saying those words, but I can certainly remember thinking those words and feeling that. So whether I exactly used those words or that, but that certainly would be the message that I was trying to get across because that's what I thought.
Right. And, you know, one of the things that came with that notion of I wasn't okay in your eyes physically, from, you know, your health concerns, your long-term concerns, I wasn't okay. What came with that was a lot of implied and direct judgment related to food.
Yeah, but, you know, it's not that I didn't think that you were special. It's not that any mother or parent thinks their kid isn't special and unique.
Especially
fat. And loved the way they are. You know, you love your child, like, I loved you no matter what, and no matter who you were, and if you were talented or smart or not smart, you still love your child 100%. It's just, I guess in the same way that I would think, like, if you were challenged intellectually in school, I would do whatever it takes to help you to be average
or
above average. Sorry. And so that's how I guess I just felt like food and eating was just, and your weight was just a thing I needed to help you with. That's
right.
All.
And I totally can understand, granted I don't have children, but I can understand something isn't right.
Right.
And I need to fix it. However, the challenge there is the attempt to fix it and the message that something isn't right created food issues. For example,
yes,
because Debbie could eat what she wanted when she wanted, but for me, there was a food scale. Do you remember the food scale?
Yes.
Yeah, I remember the food scale. And for me, the food was measured. What that meant was I learned to eat as much as I could when you weren't looking because food was something that was naughty and off limits. Mm-hmm. And as a kid, I mean, it's the same way as if you had said you can't play video games. Well, as soon as you leave to go work in the yard, I'm going to turn on the video games and get as much time in before you come back because I know that's off limits. And it taught me to be ashamed of what I ate, even if it was whatever you made to eat. And it was what the rest of the family was eating. For me, it was somehow not okay because something was wrong with me. And so not only did I learn to sneak food and hide food because I had to, because that was a very strong message coming across that this wasn't okay. And I know you remember finding wrappers in like flower vases and stuff.
Yes, I do. I do.
And buying a box of granola bars, and then it's day one, and all the granola bars are gone. Betsy, where are the granola bars? I don't know. But I felt like there was this real scarcity with food because you would hide things. You wouldn't give access to me to what Debbie had access to. And so we had like a family RV, like a recreational vehicle, and my dad kept a coffee can full of quarters in there, and I would sneak into the RV and steal the quarters and either run down the street to the ice cream truck and buy whatever I could and eat it. Even if it wasn't good, it was because it was going to be my only chance because treats and sweets were off limits for me because I was the fat kid. Or in all of the crazy sports that you made me do, I would buy food from the vending machine with the quarters and eat it at practice. So even though I was really active and might naturally have grown out of the weight issues, mm-hmm. it created a situation where nature couldn't take its course because now mm-hmm. you were creating psychological issues around food with the restriction that I didn't know how to handle because for me it wasn't about this isn't healthy and let's eat when you're hungry and let's, you know, focus on XYZ food. It was you're fat. So you can't eat these things. Your sister can because she's not fat. And so I learned to sneak food really, really, really young. Really young. And when you wouldn't keep things in the house because it was pretty obvious that like somebody was eating it all and sneaking it, then I would mix butter and sugar because that was always there. And I would just eat it. And my stepdad would buy forms of ice cream that I didn't like because I didn't like nuts at that point in time. So you would buy like almond something or other ice cream. And what I would do is, because I was a really bright kid, fortunately I've gotten a little smarter since then, I would eat the ice cream out of the freezer with a spoon. I wouldn't put it in a bowl or something because if somebody came downstairs, I had to be able to stop fast. And I would spit the nuts back into the container because I didn't like them.
Some of this is brand new for me.
No, I think you just don't remember. I remember very, very clearly. But in your attempt to like fix this problem, it actually created a lot of very serious problems. And mm-hmm. while on the one hand, the message was you couldn't have these things, you also used food for emotional purposes. I remember slamming my thumb in the RV door when we lived at Jackrabbit Run. Mm-hmm. And it's a big, heavy door. I slammed my thumb in it, and you gave me one M&M. Because I was crying my eyes out, because like I still have a scar on my thumb from that, so obviously it must have been fairly significant. You gave me one M&M, and you know, we're not born turning to food for comfort. But mm-hmm. if something really bad happened, it was, well, here, Betsy, have one M&M, like, really helped. But it taught me that food is something we can use to soothe ourselves, and needing a lot of soothing because I felt very rejected at home because I was, admittedly, That became a coping mechanism for me. If I was sad, if I was hurting, turn to food, because that's a learned behavior. Or when you stumbled upon the next diet I was going to try, do you remember taking me to the grocery store and allowing me to buy special treats because the next day the diet would start?
No, I don't remember that, but I can imagine that that happened. I can imagine.
But that really is where I learned the sort of like get it out of your system mentality of like go ahead and go crazy because tomorrow begins XYZ. Right. That is not a behavior we are born with. It's a behavior that we're learned. And sometimes we teach it to ourselves. For me, this was being taught to me at 5, 6, 7, 8 years old and onward forever. And I never, to this day, it's hard for me to be comfortable eating in front of you.
Wow.
But you know that because we were just out for lunch last week.
Yes.
So funny story, guys, just to give you a sense of like how this can, even though we can joke about it and laugh about it, and I know she was doing what she could with the skill set she had, and I know that her intentions, by and large, were good. We were out to eat, and it was my mom and her boyfriend and me and my sister. And my sister and I both got salads. I had a salad with salmon. My sister had a salad with chicken. My mom and her boyfriend split a pizza. And, you know, my sister and I are sitting there talking. And at some point, my mom's boyfriend said something like, "Oh, I'm full." And my mom says, "How many pieces of pizza did you have?" And he says, "4." And my mom says, "4? Wowza. Good thing we're walking home." And I looked at my sister and I said really quietly, not to my mom, I said really quietly to my sister, I said, "That just ruffles my feathers. Like, oh my God." No, what I said to my sister was, if she said that to me, I'd punch her in the face. If she said, "How much did you have?" And I said, "4 pieces." And she said, "Wowza, good thing you're walking home." At this point in my life, I would punch her in the face. And so my mom across the table says, What? What did you say?" And I was like, "Mom, what you just said to him is like so judgmental." And she didn't even, it doesn't even strike her that way. And granted, I have a heightened sensitivity to it.
Yes.
But for that reason, my messed up mind, and this isn't mom's problem, this is my problem, if I had had pizza at that meal and I was totally happy with my salad, it was delicious, one of the best pieces of salmon I've ever had, I need to go back there and have that salmon again. But if I had had pizza, though she's wise enough to never say wowza to me because she knows that she'd get smacked for it, I would feel that she was thinking it, which is my issue because I shouldn't care what she thinks. But she's my mom, and naturally, like, I care what she thinks. One of the big issues when I moved away for college at the end of high school, I went to college out of state. I never wanted to come home, even though I missed my family, because I knew my mom was never happy with my weight. And so that kept me from coming home and visiting family very often. And when I did, I would be so uncomfortable because I hadn't lost the weight that I knew she hoped I would have. And when I did lose weight, she was always over the moon and excited and happy. And when I didn't, even if she didn't say anything about it, I knew those thoughts were in her head. And it's not just me imagining that you're thinking things. They were.
Absolutely.
They absolutely were. That was a terribly uncomfortable thing. And it was created through good intentions, but we just have to be careful about the way that we communicate concern and understand that we're teaching something with the lessons that we send. And one of the things that you and I were talking about just a few minutes before we hit record is I asked you something about, were you ever concerned about the things that you were doing and how that would impact the relationship I had with food? What did you say to me?
I said, that never came into my mind at all. And has only an idea of somebody having a healthy relationship with food never entered my mind until probably just a few months ago when I joined that fat loss fast track.
So my mom is in my fat loss fast tracks, which she is very lean, but she's also, you know, getting older and wants to be, you know, fitter and leaner and whatnot. And there's been a lot of conversations that I think have taught you a lot.
Well, Yeah, I never thought ever myself about having a healthy relationship with food. And I think, first off, I have to say, listening to you talk is extremely painful. How you remember things and how just your idea about coming home and not wanting to come home, even though to me, you know, we have a loving family.
Of course
we love
do, yeah.
being together. Mm-hmm. I feel like, you know, our family, as when you were a child, was a happy family, you know, with struggles for sure. But to hear you say how it felt for you is extremely painful. It's really, really hard to hear because I think as a mom, I had no idea and just continue to keep unraveling, you know, the story here of how much I hurt you by trying to do the right thing. I just really wanted to be a good mother, and I wanted you to have a good life, and I wanted you to be happy, I wanted you to be healthy. And then to know that all of that angst and effort and emotional weight that I carried for you, I could have let go of that and had such a happier time
right.
myself. I just have, I think as a, maybe for in all relationships, we have no idea the power of our words and our actions.
Yeah.
But the idea of a healthy relationship with food has only just recently entered into my mind. I never was concerned that you had a healthy relationship with food. I just...
You wanted me to be thin.
Yeah. 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 That's just it.
And I think, you know, of course we could Monday morning quarterback this till we're blue in the face, but because I loved to be active, because I was a pretty good little athlete,
yes.
despite being a little heifer of a kid, they actually made up a call for me once on the basketball court called clearing house because I was aggressive and athletic
yes.
for a big girl, but I was a big girl. So I was boxing out because I was a forward. I stopped growing in like the fifth or sixth grade. So I was one of the taller ones at the time. And I like boxed out like three people at once. And so they couldn't just call it a foul because I just got a lot of people all at once clearing house. So, but my thought is, you know, if we could redo this magically, or obviously I give a lot of thought to what if I have a kid who is mm-hmm. born metabolically disadvantaged as I was,
great.
I really think that, you know, kids tend to moderate pretty well prior to developing these judgments related to food. They stop. They'll leave a half-eaten piece of cake on their plate until they learn that somebody might take it away from them because it's bad. And
mm-hmm.
so I really think that if we could magically go back, that had there not been this, Betsy, there's something wrong with you because you're not thin, that the weight probably would have taken care of itself.
Yes.
Because the issue wasn't that I was metabolically disadvantaged. That's what started your hyper-restriction
yes.
and focus on weight. But the issue was that I was sneaking food. The issue
mm-hmm.
was that I was eating in response to emotion. The issue
mm-hmm.
was that I was yo-yo dieting from like a really, really, really young age. Those were the issues that led to the weight. And so if I had never felt the need to sneak food, if I had never learned that food is something we turn to and that exercise is a punishment, that wouldn't have been the thing. Do you remember following me in the car in the morning while I wore a reflective vest because you wanted me to run 2 miles before school?
I don't remember that, but I can imagine that that happened.
I remember. And so my sister, who's all legs and very thin, you made me run cross country. I love sports, but I hate running. To this day, I think it has a lot to do with that, but I do not like running. And the rule was I had to run cross country. There was a million other things I could have done, but no. Well, my sister was the number one runner. Like,
yes.
she came in first every single time. I came in last every single time, except for one race where I got lost and cut off about 3/4 of the course and ended up not even winning, but still coming in like the top five. And everyone was like, where did Betsy come from? Betsy came through the woods because she got lost and she probably had like a Snickers bar in her pocket on the way. But exercise was very much a punishment. Like at one point you quote unquote hired Debbie, my older sister, to
mm-hmm.
train me. She had an orange whistle
mm-hmm.
and her job was to wake me up with the whistle and make me run sprints in the driveway. Do you remember that?
No.
Gosh. I do. Debbie does remember. Debbie remembers that. That's a conversation for another day. But yeah, that taught me that exercise wasn't something fun that makes us feel strong and powerful. Mm-hmm. And fortunately, I just have that athletic tendency in me to like to challenge myself. Mm-hmm. But if I didn't have that natural tendency, if I hadn't found sports that I loved, there's no doubt that I would continue to see it as a punishment. And mm-hmm. when I talk to parents now who are like, yeah, I force my kid to spend, 15 minutes on the treadmill before they're allowed to play video games, my initial gut response is that doesn't teach them, like, what do you love to do? What's fun? Mm-hmm. What makes you happy? What do you really enjoy doing? In college, I really liked playing rugby because I liked to hit things because I was an angry little thing, and I just wanted to run around and hit people without a helmet on. whole nother episode. We're getting a litany of them here. But those are the kinds of things that, while very well-intentioned, create a natural resistance. Mm-hmm. And I do believe that had it just been, we keep great foods in the house and we talk about foods that make us feel really great and foods that make us feel kind of sleepy or low energy or whatever, that I naturally would have gotten through that. And even if I hadn't, I think it's really dangerous for mom to be the food police. And it wasn't even with me that judgment came in, because I noticed it with you and...
Yes, I know that everybody used to call me the food police.
Yeah, she to this day, just 2 weeks ago or a week ago with the freaking pizza, she was very judgmental about food, and that was a very much learned behavior. We've joked, because at some point in time, I want to write a book about, my own personal story, but I also want to write a book for kids about how to feel really good and how to feel good about food and how to feel good about your body. And we joked about, about writing a book for parents and how to raise kids who respect food and respect their bodies and aren't freaking weirdos obsessed with weight and the scale and all of this sorts of things. And we've joked that chapter one for parents will be shut your mouth.
That's right.
And chapter two will be shut your mouth.
Yeah.
And chapter three will be keep it closed.
Yeah, that's
and
right.
Chapter four will be why are you still talking? But it's not that either of us are saying just let your kids struggle and let them eat whatever they want because you don't want to be the food police. You control what comes in the house. Mm-hmm. But you also control so much with your own language as a parent, with your own body image issues, with the way that you interact with food and watching you, even though you were not overweight, you very much portrayed this notion of good food, bad food. Mm-hmm. Instead of I feel amazing when I eat like this and I just don't feel as good when I eat like this, or I love the way I feel when I do XYZ. Instead it was very good, bad, very... Oh, I'm being bad because I'm eating Cheez-Its, or I'm being bad because I'm getting a McDonald's ice cream cone. And that, even if it hadn't been about anything you said or did to me, even if you hadn't forced me to get on the scale in the morning in your bathroom or whatever, watching you sends a powerful message. So I really think that even for parents, staying in your own lane and working on your own relationship with food is really powerful. If we could get in this time machine and go back to when I was 2 or 3 years old, starting then, what do you think you would do differently?
I think I would work on my own issues. I would really, I guess it never entered my head, this whole idea of what foods make me feel good. I've only just begun to think about that. I think in the time that I was parenting in the 80s, that just sort of language and attitude just wasn't prevalent. I didn't know where to go for help. I didn't know where to go for resources. So I went to physicians and brought you to doctors and brought you to nutritionists.
Who recommended diets for a 7-year-old.
Right. And horrible things like the nutritionist who said, just pack those horrible, dreadful things
cat
of
food.
Tuna.
Oh, my God.
Not real cat food.
Yeah, but it was like these awful little
things
tiny
of
tins of tuna fish with stale crackers.
Right. And when you open them up, it
smelled like cat food.
And that's what the doctor recommended, to go to this nutritionist.
So then I hated healthy, what was quote-unquote healthy, I learned to abhor because it was gross.
Right.
Or even, I had you were wonderful about giving me resources, and I know you spent a lot of money on this, which is admirable. Unfortunately, it totally messed me up. But you know, one of my trainers, as a 9 or 10 year old, was just like, "Oh, we'll make a stir fry of carrots and egg whites." Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, what does that teach you about really loving and enjoying food and eating things you really love and enjoy? What it taught me was healthy food is nasty.
Right.
Let me sneak the chocolate peanut butter granola bars.
Right.
Because those taste good. Compared to egg whites with carrots, you betcha they taste good. Of course I wanted 5. I always felt deprived with healthy foods. And I know for me, you know, if I could fast mm-hmm. forward and imagine that I have a chunky, I was a cute, chunky kid, you know.
Adorable.
But if I had a little chunky monkey, first of all, I don't think I would have a scale. Because I would want mm-hmm. my kid to understand. One of the things that you did for many years was I had to check my weight in front of you every morning. Mm-hmm. And I knew that if it went up, it was a problem. And if it went down, I was a good girl. And I didn't associate that with taking care of my body or what was happening to my body. I cut my own hair, thinking as an idiot child that that would make the number go down. I would spit into a cup for 20 minutes before I knew she was going to come up and have me check my weight. I would turn on the shower as hot as it would go and do jumping jacks, hoping the steam would make me sweat. Nothing that really had any meaningful impact on my health or my body fat, but all in an attempt to game the number on the scale. I learned that if I could just lean a little bit on the wall, that could take, like, all of a sudden I'd be down 17 pounds. Oop, leaning too much, come a little closer. You know, but those were the things that as a little one, I learned to do instead of just, "Betsy, I know you don't feel good about the way you look." And that's what we want to do. And that doesn't have anything to do with the number on the scale. And we want to really focus on foods you love. What foods do you really, really love? And how can we make them work within this goal of taking care of your body and making you feel amazing? So I know for me, I would not want my little one, whether they had a weight problem or not, to see me getting on the scale every day and being like, "Oh, what the heck? It's up. How is that possible?" Or, "Oh my gosh, I need to make better choices because, you know, my weight is totally out of control," or anything like that. But instead, I would want it to be about the way my genes feel, the way my energy level is, how I feel when I look in the mirror in the morning, how I feel about the foods that I'm eating. You know, I shared with my groups that, you know, last night I went for a walk and I came upon a little fish market. And I went in and I bought a piece of sea bass and I walked back with it and I cooked it and I made a salad and I turned off the TV and I just ate it quietly and enjoyed it. And I didn't feel deprived at all. And that's such beautiful fat loss friendly food. And I enjoyed every bite of it. And I didn't feel deprived and I didn't feel restricted. And that's such a stark contrast to the way it was growing up. And the healthy food was like really awful. And the not healthy food was really amazing. So of course, you want to eat more of the unhealthy stuff if the healthy stuff doesn't taste good. And so I would really want to make sure that my kids understood that eating well is amazing and it's not deprivation at all. And it feels so much better to have something like that beautiful piece of fresh sea bass in a salad than it does to get like the crappy pizza takeout. But as a kid, if you brought pizza home, I was going to hoard as many pieces as I could as fast as I could until you turned it off because the option was egg whites and carrots, you know? And I just think that our intentions don't matter very much. As much as we would love for them to matter, they don't matter because what we do is what matters. What we do with ourselves and our own choices versus our intentions and what we do with the people in our lives. Like your intentions, making the comment about Bob's Pizza the other day, your intention was just like, "Oh, wow, you had 4. I had 2 and I feel pretty stuffed." Like it wasn't malicious, but he of course is like, "I didn't even notice. I've had people say worse things to me." And I'm hypersensitive to it, but a lot of people are. And I wasn't always hypersensitive to it. It mm-hmm. started and then it just continued and repetition. And I got to say, you know, to your point that it's painful to hear me talk about this, I want you to know, and I've said this to you, but I also want everybody else to know for as it relates to my life, but also as it relates to your own, I wouldn't change any of this because I wouldn't be where I am now. I wouldn't be who I am now. Primal Potential wouldn't exist the platform to help other people work through these sensitive issues wouldn't exist if I hadn't had these struggles. And so I'm grateful for the struggles. Did it make life hard? Yeah. But it also gave me a passion and a purpose that I wouldn't have had otherwise. And it's a conversation that has to happen. And I know that these are struggles in millions of households, yes, that aren't being talked about, because for us, for years, it was contentious to bring it up. I would end up in tears. You would end up in tears. We would be at an impasse, and then we'd just start the next diet the next day with a hug. Mm-hmm. And it was a nightmare. And so the ability to say, hey guys, it matters. When we teach our kids, oh, you have a boo-boo, here's food, it seems benign, and I'm not a purist. I'm not saying, like, never give your kid food for emotional stuff, but understand that you're teaching something. You're teaching something, and the reality is, have the cake and the candy because you want to, because it's delicious, and pay attention to how it makes you feel, and don't make it this big, huge thing. Don't make it a off-limits thing. Don't make it in response to pain or injury or sadness or celebration. Food is food. We bring the emotion to it, and we have to be very careful about what that emotion is. But as much as it was hard, I can honestly say that I'm grateful for it, because I know I'm better. I know you're better. I know we both have abilities now to help people that we wouldn't have had without this. And I really think that us having a difficult and painful conversation is going to help a lot of people.
Well, as difficult as it is every time we have these conversations, and we haven't had that many of them, but when we do have them, as difficult as it is for me to hear, you had to live it. It was like, I just have to hear it.
Right.
And hear about your struggles, and hear that my efforts to help you just made it harder for you is really hard. And I think that the bringing it up and talking about it in front of people, it's first off, it's not just between mother and child. It might be between spouses, when yep. you have a spouse that's overweight and you're trying to help them because they're struggling, or whatever it is, that you just have to run your own race, mm-hmm. how powerful that is. And for mothers, I know for me, the only person I ever talked to really about the issues with you and my concerns for you was really your physician and the nutritionist. It wasn't like I talked to my girlfriends about it.
Mm-hmm. Because there was shame.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's just sort of like, if I were to bring it up, say to my best friend and say, you know, I'm worried about Betsy because she's overweight. I think I never really thought, oh, there's nobody I can talk to. But when I look back on it, I probably never talked to anybody about it, because it would be like saying, Betsy isn't enough. Mm-hmm. And she would be like, well, what's the matter? Betsy, everybody loves Betsy. She's wonderful. Right. She's fabulous. She's, you know, all of these things that you are and that you were. But as a mother, to bring it up to somebody means that I'm saying my kid isn't enough. And then there's shame on me that I'm feeling like my kid isn't enough and that I'm trying to change my child. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, I was trying to change yep. you. Mm-hmm. And that sense when you talked about coming home, and I never said, oh, you know, you've lost, like, I don't even want to say,
right.
you know, you look like you've lost weight, or I would never say, oh, you look like you've gained weight, at least, you know, when you became an adult anyway.
Right.
But you're right. I was thinking those things, not saying them, but I just think it's so important for parents particularly to understand the power of your own journey, how that impacts your child.
And whether you say it or not, my mom was very vocal in her words and with her strategies. But guys, even if you aren't saying it and you're giving yourself a pat on the back because you aren't doing some of these things that my mom did, your kid can sense it if you're feeling it. I knew
yeah.
when my mom was dissatisfied with the way I looked. I knew my mom was dissatisfied when my school uniform kilts didn't fit.
Mm-hmm.
And I also watched her judgment related to food with herself and with other people, even when she wasn't saying anything to me. So be careful before you give yourself too much credit for not saying or doing some of these things, because your kids feel what you're feeling
mm-hmm.
and can observe what you do with yourself and your own choices and your own relationship with food. So even if you feel like you're staying in your own lane, if your lane is jacked up, they know and they're learning from that, and their food behaviors are largely influenced. And so one of the primary motivators, I think, for people who are caretakers can also be what signals am I sending? What am I teaching silently through my own behavior that has real power?
And I think whatever your issues are, the people around you know them and
and
feel them, because really, I've been thin my entire life except for one semester in college, when I gained weight, and came home actually to my mom, who looked at me and said, "Oh my heavens!" I was normally like a size 8. She said, "You." I walked in the door and I remember my mother just very casually going, "Wow, you look like you're a size 14. I guess you better cut back."
Yeah.
And
a lot of that is you know, one comment in isolation. I don't want anybody to think is going to like totally screw up your kid.
No, but what I'm saying about that is that, so I've always been thin, but I can tell you only until really the last few months have I actually been able to say, have a piece of pizza like I did a couple of weeks ago, and feel like it's okay.
It's okay, right.
Where normally I would think, oh, I should just be eating the healthy thing and feel guilty about eating a pizza or guilty about an ice cream. Even though I've always been thin except for one really short...
You just didn't have a normal relationship with food despite not having a weight issue.
Right, right. And so I would never thought that my own attitude toward food was going to have anything to do with you at all. And it did. And I continue to be amazed at, gosh, what a disaster.
But it's a beautiful disaster, honestly, because it's why we're here and it's why we can have this conversation. And I mean it when I say, you know, guys, we can let our struggles define us. And I could say, oh, well, I'm going to forever have this issue because my mom screwed me up. No, I have the full power and authority to change my story, to look at and say, what went wrong? What contributed to my behaviors? And how can I change that? We can stay stuck, but why? Right? Why do you stay there when the door is wide open, when you can make any changes that you want, when you can transform your life in any way? If you stay stuck because of your past, that is a choice. That is a decision to stay there. The only way that today has anything to do with yesterday is if you make the same choices, if you make the same mistakes. And I'm not doing that. You're not doing that. We all have the power to move beyond it. And that's what I think is so, so powerful. So I want to do a little special giveaway for Primal's anniversary, which was this past Tuesday, 7/12. But before I give you the details, I just want to say so sincerely, thank you, Mom, for being willing to do this, because I know it's not easy for you and it takes a ton of courage and honesty to say, I made a mistake. So I love you and I'm really grateful that you're willing to have this conversation.
I love you too, and I'm really proud of you. And thanks. I'm sorry. I did the best I could.
I know. All right, enough of the sappy shit. Now I have to mark this episode explicit, but whatever, it was worth it. So Primal's anniversary was on 7/12, and what I want to do is I want to give away two 20-minute coaching calls with me, one-on-one, just me and you, where we'll chat on the phone about what you're struggling with and strategies to help you move to the next level. I'm going to pick two winners at random, and I'm going to do another giveaway on Saturday's episode to kind of celebrate this anniversary week, because Primal Potential isn't Primal Potential because of me, it is because of you. So here's how you can win. You got to listen to this. There's a couple things you got to do. So I want you to comment on either Instagram or Facebook with the one thing that you have learned, and you might have learned more than one thing, but you know, hey, we'll be conservative here. One thing you've learned from Primal Potential since you've been listening to the podcast or reading the emails or whatever else. I'm going to use a random number generator to pick a comment. You can comment on the post for this episode. So if you're familiar with the Primal Potential Facebook page or the Instagram page, you know that I post each episode with the episode number. So this episode number, I believe, will be 204. So comment on the post related to episode 204 with something that you have learned from Primal Potential. I'll use a random number generator to pick two people, but here's the second part. I will check to see if you are on the Primal Potential email list, because if I don't have your email address, I can't tell you that you won. And so you have to make the comment and you have to be on the VIP email list in order to win. I use that email list to send workouts and tips, motivations, meal ideas, that sort of thing. If you aren't on the VIP list, you can get there over on the homepage at primalpotential.com, or if you're in the US, you can text the word primal to the number 44222. If you're already on the list, don't sweat it, but I will contact you guys on Saturday via email with instructions to schedule our coaching call, which will be super fun. Also, before I share with you guys what I ate yesterday, I already mentioned the cod. Ascend Nashville, the first ever Primal Potential weekend event that I am beyond excited about. I'm going to be spending the weekend with 50 women in downtown Nashville, Tennessee. Tickets are on sale. There are only 50. You can listen to the past episode from 7/12, which is episode 203. That'll give you all the details. I'll also link to it in the show notes. To buy your ticket, go to primalpotential.com/ascend. All right, we'll wrap up with what I ate yesterday. I've been getting a lot of questions about, Elizabeth, why don't you drink bulletproof coffee anymore? I do, but it's summer and it's hot, and I prefer cold coffee in the summer to hot coffee. I prefer lighter foods to heavier foods, so I've been drinking just cold brew coffee black. That is what I am sipping on right now. So that's how I started the day yesterday, and then I had gone to the farmer's market and got some tabbouleh from a little Lebanese market, which was awesome. So I had some tabbouleh with bison, and then as I mentioned, I found that beautiful piece of sea bass and enjoyed it with a salad, so that is what I ate yesterday. Thanks for joining me for this emotionally charged episode, and thanks again to my mom for being willing to have these conversations, and we will be back on Saturday with another special anniversary episode, so we will see you then. Take care. Are you ready to move beyond listening and learning and really change your life? Really live into your highest potential instead of just wishing for it and hoping something clicks? I want to do that with you. And that's why this fall, I'm hosting the first ever Primal Potential Women's Transformation Weekend, Ascend, in downtown Nashville, Tennessee, November 3rd through the 5th. It will be a small group, but you can get your ticket and learn all the details at primalpotential.com/ascend or by listening to episode 203 of the Primal Potential podcast. Here's what I know. Ascend will change your life, and I would love to have you join me. See you this fall.